Starting. So since we had a little break of 1 week, let me tell you where we are and what I plan to do for the rest of the course. So we're going to start a new part. We had part one was the derivation of the mathematical physics equation. Part two was some basic dynamical and structural property of NLS. And part three, I want to start this part three, and we have 4 weeks. I want to discuss the mathematical theory. Of the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. Okay, we have 4 weeks for this, and I would like to organize the time this way. So the first chapter. So we will be in chapter 7 when we will concentrate our effort on the linear Schrödinger equation, which is the equation without the nonlinear term. So we'll spend a week, I hope this week, on this equation, because estimates on this equation are basic to continue to get the estimate for the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. The next chapter will be essentially existence properties. Global and existence properties, and here I would like to spend only 1 week, and I will not do all the proofs. I will just make a sample of a choice about what is important for us. And the last two chapters, the last 2 weeks, so this will be 1 week, I hope. This will be 1 week, and I hope that the last 2 weeks will be on blow-up properties. I would like to organize the time like this. I will give you some references because, you know, often if you want to do the proof, it can be quite involved. So we'll do some number of things, but not necessarily everything. So this is our program. And today and tomorrow, we will spend the time on the linear Schrödinger equation. Sometimes it's also called the free Schrödinger. This is chapter 7 in our and here I want, let me tell you again the content of this chapter so we all together know where we are. I will first need a little introduction just to put things into context, especially notations, and why we are interested in writing. Why do we need linear estimates? The second will be basic estimates. For those of you who know what it is about, it will be decay estimate and Stricard estimate. Well, no, this will be the decay estimate, then we will do the Stricard estimate, more refined estimate. And I would like in particular to not Stricard. For those of you who go to many talks, you must have heard this, the existence of this estimate several times. I think it is useful to see at least once for the Schrödinger equation, the proof and the estimate. And finally, I want to spend some time on the smoothing effect, which means that if you solve the Schrödinger equation, the linear Schrödinger equation, in some sense, the the solution at time t is more regular than the solution at t equals 0. You gain some regularity. So I would like to explain that difference. Right, so this is the program for today and tomorrow. And so the introduction. So we will be, you know, in preparation for the chapter concerning existence property of the nonlinear Schrödinger equation, we will be interested in the Cauchy problem, in the initial value problem, well, our goal is to do it for the nonlinear Schrödinger equation, and with initial conditions, and everything will be done for x in the whole space. The theory is much more delicate if you decide to work in a finite domain or in a periodic domain. But we'll concentrate and one of the basic tools for the mathematical theory of the nonlinear Schrödinger equation is to understand the dispersive properties, or to understand and use the dispersive properties of the solution of the linear problem. All right. Now, what about the references? There is a reference book on all the things concerning the existence property, long time behavior, blow up properties. There is a book, it is by Kasnav, it's 89. And the good thing about it is you can find it on his web page. So I don't have his address, but it's not difficult to find it. He's somewhere in Paris 6 or 7. So if you go to his web page, the book is there. So you can just take it. And it's called An Introduction to Nonlinear Schrödinger Equation. You can always photocopy my copy. So this will be our reference when we cannot give all the details in class. So about the notations, well, we will need to use the LP space, of course. Everybody knows the LP space with the norm UP. So the LP space will be equipped by the norm LP. This. We will also work with subolat spaces. So H1 will be the space with the function U, and its derivatives, all derivatives, all first order derivatives in L2, in the sense of distributions. And also, when needed, we will work in HS, subolat spaces of order N, or the order S. And okay, so, and I'm sure all of you know this, have seen this space. Just write it for and the norm associated to the subolat space of order S is the sum of the L2 norm, so square is the sum of the squares of the L2 norm of all derivatives up to order S. And alpha is taken in the sense of multi-index, which means if you want H3 here, you must take all derivative of order 3 in all possible combinations. Right? Another thing that is often useful is to remember that an equivalent norm to the HS space written like this, since we are working in the whole space, is equivalent norm for UHS is to write it in a Fourier space with 1 plus k squared to the power s. U hat k dk. Okay, so sometimes we might work with this norm. All right. So all this, yes. Well, I told you I don't have it here. But if you go to the website of the university, Mass Department of Paris 6, you will find him, and from there you will find his website. I can give it tomorrow, otherwise. Okay. So this is essentially, nothing new. And we start now with the linear, the linear Schrodinger equation, and in particular the basic. Basic estimate, right? So I'm going to work now with the equation that I write in this form: C of x and 0 equals phi of 0, phi of x, and x in R. Excuse me? It's for f integer. Yeah. Sorry. Thank you. F to s. Thank you. Right. So, first of all, the solution. Solution can be explicitly written in the following form: psi of xt equals include coefficient. Integral over Rn exponential I x So there are several ways to see that, to do it. First of all, you might ask me, what does it mean, the square root of I? Right? It has two square roots. I has two square roots. So you must choose which one. So a way to decide which one you want to choose is to... How to choose the square root of I? It has two roots. So the way to choose it is to imagine... Maybe it's not 100%. It has to be completely justified, but it's very natural to... Let me rewrite the equation with the I like this. Okay? A natural way to approximate the solution is to say, I'm going to solve the equation. This epsilon positive small. As if you regularize by a little bit of diffusion, by some heat equation. And if you have an equation like this, because epsilon is positive, you can calculate the solution just when you do it for the heat equation, for example, in Fourier space. And the solution you get is, let me call it epsilon, you get the solution C epsilon. Pi t n over 2. So I'm writing the solution of the heat equation where the coefficient is epsilon plus I. Here I put epsilon plus I n over 2. So let me put the I down to have a minus so I can rewrite it like this. I plus epsilon. And here, so let me write 1/2 to the power n, right? So here, what do we mean by what do you think? What should we choose for the square root of I? How we should choose this? Well, the way you do it is that you have to choose this, which has the unique root that has the real part, real positive real part. Okay. So you take the limit when epsilon tends to zero of epsilon plus I 1/2 is equal 1 plus I over square root. So this is a way to see it. And to recover this formula, well, you for example, do it in Fourier space, right? Fourier space. So in Fourier space, how do you solve? In Fourier space. So you take the Fourier, you call sec k of t is a Fourier transform of psi right? So if you take the Fourier transform of this equation, what do you get? You get I psi hat of t plus Laplacian gives minus k, absolute value of k, psi hat equals 0, which implies that psi hat of k and t equal exponential I k 2 t. Psi hat of k and 0, which is, this is the initial condition, Fourier transform of the initial condition, to be multiplied by ik2t. So if you take the inverse Fourier transform, c of x, t, equal the convolution of the initial condition phi with the inverse Fourier transform, let me write it like this, of exponential I k2 phi. Now, by scaling the inverse Fourier transform of exponential I k t t, by scaling, it is equal to, I have to be careful where you put in dimension n, it is equal to 1 over t to the power n over 2 of the Fourier transform, the inverse Fourier transform, exponential I k2. This is just by scaling, write the formula. Thank you. And then the only thing you have to do is to calculate the inverse Fourier transform of exponential I k2. So again, you approximate exponential I k2t by replacing I by I plus epsilon. Alright? So in this case, I minus epsilon. Yeah. Or if you want, 1 over I plus epsilon. Alright. So if you want to find the inverse Fourier transform of this function, this is the Gaussian. As long as epsilon is positive, this decreases fast at infinity. So this is the Fourier transform of the Gaussian. And you know that the Fourier transform of exponential minus x squared is exponential minus k squared over 2. Right? It has the same form. So by the same way, when you have a coefficient 1 plus I over 2, I plus epsilon, gives you the same formula. And this is how you recover this. Yeah? And then it's epsilon tends to 0. Okay? I think you can go, you can take phi as the temper distribution. This formula is valid for temper distribution. Whether it requires some decay, must be discussed. Yeah. You can take as an initial condition a Dirac, for example, a Dirac mass. So, phi should be. You must take solutions that decrease at infinity somehow. L2, for example, you can I can check more carefully the initial condition. All right, so this is the basic formula that we will need. Basic formula, and now estimate. Which are also called decay estimates. So suppose that you take an initial condition C in L2. Immediately, where is the equation? You see here that if you multiply this equation by C bar, and you take, multiply by C bar, and you take the real, the imaginary part. You obtain immediately real part, and you integrate over the domain. You obtain that the real part when you multiply by psi bar and you integrate, you get here something real. If you take the imaginary part, it disappears. So this is what's left. So this is exactly d dt, one half of the integral of psi square dx equals 0. You agree with that? Do I need to detail this calculation, or you've seen many times? Have you seen it before? Yes? Not so much? Well, let me do it once, because you may have. So, you multiply by psi bar. So, e psi bar psi t plus Laplacian psi psi bar equals 0, and then you integrate. Right? When you integrate by part, this gives you I psi t psi bar plus minus gradient c square equals 0. You take the imaginary part. If you take the imaginary part, this disappears. This is real. Right? So imaginary part of I something is real. Is a real part of the same thing. Plus 0 equals 0. Right? So what is the real part? What is the real part of C bar T? Well, it's C bar T. It's C bar CC plus C bar T, one half. This is exactly d dt of c square. Okay. So this is a conservation of L2 norm, which means that if you start with a solution phi, which is L2, which will start with an initial condition L2, the L2 norm is conserved. Okay. So when we write L2, we mean L2 of R n. So as a function of t, the L2 norm of the solution is constant. Can somebody help me with this? Okay. So this is one of the most important facts. And the second important fact is, suppose that phi is L1, just integrable, suppose that the initial condition is integrable. Then the L infinity norm. So what does it mean, L infinity norm? I take almost everywhere the sup norm of the solution, in the sup in X, and I consider that as a function of t. Then the L infinity norm of the solution at time t is bounded by a constant 1 over t, so we have n over 2. Okay, I don't put the absolute value, I will put it in a minute. T1. So this is what is called the decay estimate. Which means that as t gets larger and larger, the amplitude, the size of the solution, the L infinity norm of the solution, tends to become smaller and smaller. And to see that is a very, very simple. You go back to the explicit formula. From the explicit formula. You see that, and you take the absolute value. So this gives you t. T is positive for the moment. Okay, t positive. I'm going to discuss that in a minute. That t can be also taken negative. And then you put the absolute value inside the integral. Exponential I is absolute value 1. Which what's left is fine. Okay, so it's very simple. Yes. Oh, this is a statement, this is a lemma, and this is a proof. The proof follows from the explicit formula. And here is this constant, 1 over 4 pi. Now, I should have done that before, but since I'm here, let me make a remark. When you want to solve the Schrödinger equation, you should have it somewhere. So we want to solve this the linear Schrödinger equation. And up to now, I have implicitly supposed that t is positive. This is the initial condition at t equals 0, and I have supposed that t, you solve it for t positive. But what I'm claiming is that you can solve the solution, you can solve the equation for the Schrödinger equation, both for t positive and t negative. Unlike the heat equation, where you cannot integrate backwards, for the Schrödinger equation, you can solve in both directions. It's like the wave equation, if you want. And the reason is, let me define the solution when t is negative, very simply, very simple way. So if t of xt is solution of Schrödinger equation for t positive, so it satisfies I psi t, and its initial condition now. Let me take, if I take the conjugate, if I take the conjugate of this equation, I see that minus Laplacian I plus Laplacian of t conjugate equals 0. And psi bar Okay, and now let me call t prime equal minus t. So I change time, t prime is positive. Let me consider t prime. Let me call t prime equal minus t. Then this equation can be rewritten in the form notation. If I write if c of x t is the solution written with a kernel up there, which means that to phi I make the convolution with the exponential that was written, I call it t of t. So t of t is the convolution with the kernel I, so 1 over 4 pi I t n over 2, convolution with this kernel. So t can be seen to phi, we associate the solution. In terms of an operator, it is often denoted by minus, is it plus or minus? I, case I, Laplacian. I T Laplacian. All right. So if I write T like this and I copy this result here, I can see that if I take phi, I take its complex conjugate. And I solve the Schrödinger equation in t prime, so in minus t. I take the complex conjugate of the whole thing. This is also equal. This is the solution at minus t. So this is a way to define the solution when t is negative. Is it okay? So again, if I want to define the solution for t negative, I take the complex conjugate of the initial condition, I integrate backwards with the formula that is given up there, and I take the complex conjugate. So this way, given this problem, I can discuss the solution for both positive and negative solutions, both in positive and negative time, right? Okay. Now, another remark that I will need later. First of all, I would like to say that this formula, the explicit formula that gives the solution in terms of initial condition is valid for t positive and t negative. This is the first thing. So this was the remark one. Remark two that we will use several times is that if I have two you have two functions, phi 1 and phi 2, and I calculate the L2 scalar product of, if you want, the solution of the Schrödinger equation at time t with phi 2, then this is exactly equal to phi 1 t . So let's check that. We will use this many times. So what does that mean? It means that I take the L2 scalar product of the solution for phi one as an initial condition. So I take this formula, 1 over 4 pi I t n over 2 integral exponential phi 1 of x prime dx prime. So this is t of t phi 1. This is the solution of the Schrödinger equation for initial condition t phi 1. I multiply x prime and I take the scalar product with phi 2 in L2. Right, so this is the left-hand side of the equality. X, thank you. Right. So let me rewrite it. Double integrals in x and x prime of 1 over 4 pi I t n over 2 phi 1 of x prime exponential I x x phi 2 by dx dx prime. So this is the left hand side. Now what is the right hand side? The right hand side is integral phi 1 of, let me change the notation, right? Oh, it doesn't matter. So phi 1 of x integral. So now I take the initial condition phi 2 and I solve the Schrödinger equation backwards. So I replace t by minus t in the formula upstairs. So minus 4 pi I t n over 2 exponential. I change t into minus I t. Into minus t. Phi 2. But remember, we have to, when I do the scalar product here, I must take the conjugate, right? So there will be a conjugate here. This is a conjugate. And conjugate. I'm going to write it a little bit nicer, but this is the L2 scalar product. And of course, when I take the conjugate, it will change I into my plus minus I into plus I. So it will change this sign. It will change this sign. So we will cover exactly the same formula. Okay. So this we will use many times. Okay? So let me put together the two estimates that I have. So this is the end of remark two. And now let me go back to these two estimates and put them together, one next to the other. So if I calculate the L2 norm, well, it is equal, of that of the initial condition. And if I calculate the L2 norm, the L infinity norm, it is more or equal to a constant, c to the power n over 2, So from these two estimates, one can perform an interpolation between L2 L infinity versus L2 L1, and this gives you an estimate for the solution C in L, let me write it correctly, whether it's P or Q, what do I want to write? So if I want to estimate the LP, the LP norm of psi for P larger than 2, so P larger than 2, then it will be estimated in terms of the LP prime norm of phi. So what is the relation between P and P prime? They are conjugate. And the coefficient is an interpolation between 1 and 1 over T. It is of the form, it is always important not to make a mistake, n, so it's 1/2 minus 1 over t. So how do we see that? Well, this requires to use an interpolation theorem that I will not prove nor state, but I can give you a precise reference. There is a book by this book that is called I think it's Interpolation Theorem. I don't remember the name of the book. The authors are Berg and Lofter. Orthography spelling is difficult. And the first chapter 1, deals exactly with a general formulation of an interpolation between two spaces and inequalities of that. So the only thing, if you want to go to this book, to identify the spaces from the left hand side, the constant, and the right hand side, and you apply this theorem. The proof of the general theorem is in that book. Okay, so I leave it there, but it is a very important theorem that tells you that unless you work with L2, so for any norm LP that for P larger than 2, the LP norm decays as T goes to infinity. Okay? When T equals 2, well, this gives you 0, 1, 0, so there is no decay for the L2 norm. For all the other norms, LP, P larger than 2, this is true. You have decay. Okay? And at the limit, P infinity, you recover this formula, P equals 2, you recover that one. So this is a basic estimate And it is sufficient when you want to prove the basic existence theorem, say in H1 of the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. But as soon as you want to get a little more rough, refined estimate, there is another family of inequalities that are called the Stricard estimate. And I would like to show them to you and to prove them, to prove it. So when you hear these words, Stricard estimate, they don't look too mysterious, at least for one case, for the Schrödinger equation. The Stricard estimate or Stricard inequalities. So this I should call that theorem one. Now I'm going to write theorem 2. So in the following, I will just suppose that the initial condition is as smooth as you want. That's it. As smooth as you want, C infinity, with compact support, so that all the manipulation I'm doing are correct. So if I took, and then by density, it is enough to work with C in LP prime. Okay. So the theorem 2 is as the following form. If I take the solution of the Schrödinger equation and I consider the norm both in time and space. So, I consider the norm in the space 2 + 4n. If I take I take integral over R, the time, integral over Rd of the solution C of xt. To the power 2 + 4/n, 1 / 2 + 4/n. Okay, this is exactly what I'm talking about, the L2 + 4/n of the solution. This is bounded by a constant, phi L2. I'm sorry, N and D is the same. So very specific. I must take the index of the LP norm, of the index of this LP norm, of LP space, exactly 2 + 4/n. So if N equal 2, it's L4. And this Stricard estimate tells me that in time and space, I can bound the solution by the only thing here is the L2 norm of the initial condition. So in this sense, these Stricard estimates are seen to be smoothing effects because, as I just said now, if you take an initial condition L2 for the Schrödinger equation, your solution, as soon as t is positive, is in L4. For T positive or negative, doesn't matter. Okay, so this estimate was proved by Stricard in 77, but I will not prove it here in this form. This is a particular case of a more general one, it is a particular of a more general one that has been done by several authors. I will just refer to the paper by Ginny Branzello, 1985. I can give you the reference if you need it. And this the theorem, the extension formulation of this estimate is in this form. So I need to make a little definition first in order to the theorem. I would like then to convince you that the formulation can be in a particular case, it gives back the theorem 2. And the third thing I want to do is to give the proof of theorem 2. Maybe not completely today, but at least to start today. Well, the only thing that you need is that the initial condition is L2. So you do the proof, for example, for a very smooth function phi, whose L2 norm is bounded, and then by density, so you pass to the limit. So the definition, I need a little definition. We're going to say, you see, we're going to work with this LP space, both in T and X. So if I say P and R, I'm going to say that this pair of numbers are admissible. The pair is admissible if they are related. So 2 over P, no, I'm going to put Q here. 2 over Q equals N over 2 minus N. Okay, so I'm saying that Q, my letters are not, I'm going to put the R line. 2 over N over 2 minus N over R. Okay? So I say that Q and R this pair is admissible if they are related by this formula. Essentially, I'm saying that P and this number are this pair. Okay? And of course, this is valid for R larger than 2. Am I correct? This is valid for R between 2 and N minus 2. Okay, we want this to be positive. So R has to be larger than 2. And Q is not infinite. So this is a relation B. This is valid on R is larger than 2 and not too large when it gets to this number. This is for dimension N larger than 2 and no condition. So R between 2, do I have and infinity if dimension N is 1 or 2. So this is the definition of an admissible pair. And now I'm going to write down the theorem 3 in the following form. For every... Oh, you know what? I need another notation. I need another notation, which is the when I talk about F, let's say, belongs to L, Q, I will have to deal with these spaces. The space of function whose when I take the LP norm respect to space, it gives me a function of time. I integrate respect to time in LQ sense. This is the norm associated to this space. So when I talk about the space of this written like that, it means that the corresponding norm. So what is the corresponding norm? Is equipped with this norm. So F in this space this. Well, it means that I take the LP norm in respect to the space variable. Right, it gives me the LP norm. I integrate, and then I take the LQ norm. And then I take the LQ norm, so I multiply it here by Q, dt, 1 over Q. Everybody follows this notation. All right. So, with this spaces, I'm going to write the statement, which is the theorem 3. For every admissible pair QR, so for any admissible pair QR that satisfies pair that satisfies this relation, Q and R are related by this formula, and every initial condition phi in L2 of RD the mapping, so which mapping we are talking about, we're taking for each time I associate the solution at time t. This mapping belongs to LQ, and I'm going to explain exactly what that means. This mapping, let's say like this, mapping satisfies, is continuous from R the in T into to LQ of RRP. In other words, we're going to prove the following thing. We're going to take phi, we apply the Schrödinger operator. We take the norm into space. This is exactly what we will prove. So this is the purpose. Rn. Okay. So, Rn. Okay, so this we will prove tomorrow, but let me tell you the special case. If you consider this inequality and you take the special case, P equal R. So suppose you've been able to prove theorem 3. I just want to show you that theorem 2 is just a particular case. So how does it? I think the only thing that you have to do is a particular case. Theorem 3 gives estimate 2. Okay, so how do you see it? You take, you see, in theorem 2, the norm with respect to space and time is the same. The mapping, what did I say? Consider the mapping like this. Let me express it differently. You are right. I should say, consider this mapping phi, all right, is continuous from, for this case, from L2 to this. So take the particular case Q equal RR, which means that 1 over Q must be equal to N over 2 minus N over R. N over Q. So 1 over Q, N plus 2, equals N over 2. Which is exactly Q equals, you put it, Q equal what? Is 2 plus 4 over N. Alright? So if I take the particular case of two admissible numbers that are the same, then the Q and R must be equal to 2 plus 4 over N. And rewriting this formula in terms with Q and R being equal to that number gives you exactly here the L 2 plus 4 over N norm of the solution in space and time. Alright? Right. So, in originally in 77, Stricker put this estimate, the very general way in with methods of harmonic analysis. It was done, I think, if I remember, it was done at the same time with wave and Schrodinger equations. And later, with a purpose, well, he did not have that in mind of, he did not have nonlinear PDEs in mind, but 10 years later, and even and now in particular, this estimate has been really very powerful. And here, I proved the most basic ones. There are more refined them. I mean, some people have refined them too. And yeah. Oh, two of you. Yes, this is the same thing. Thank you. You are puzzling me. Check. Two. Two over Q equal two equal N plus four. One minute, let's just check this. I did not try to go right away. Two over Q, this is correct. This is correct. No. Is it correct? Yeah. Okay. No, but this is not correct. Oh yes, 2 plus 4 then. Oof. This is correct, right, Alex? So Q equals 2 plus 4. All right. So I would like tomorrow to prove this estimate. I would like also tomorrow, even if I don't do all of it, to prove a similar estimate in the case where you have an inhomogeneous Schrödinger equation. Because if you have in mind the nonlinear Schrödinger equation, essentially the F will be the nonlinear term, and to do a bootstrap argument, we will have to have estimates with the right hand side here. So this is a program for tomorrow. Thank you.